Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Young Kwok and Julia Kelleher, authors of The IBM Center Report, Risk Management for Grants Administration, a case study of the U.S. Department of Education. So, Julia, recently the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, issued a new risk management requirements for grant recipients. Would you outline these requirements and how the impact of the efforts of this case study for the IBM Center? Are there any significant enhancements to the risk management practices federal agencies are required to perform?
Sure. So the Omni Circular, this new circular that was released in 2013, I believe was an effort to improve the consistency, efficiency, and effectiveness with which federal agencies engaged in those administrative processes. They wanted to reduce duplication. They wanted to focus on performance as well as compliance, increased transparency. These are all things that have become, you know, in government important of late. It also strengthens oversight and it creates a target. It really does highlight the focus on reducing fraud, waste, and abuse in ways that the previous circulars did, but maybe not in such a highlighted way. And with respect to the implications for risk management, every agency now has to look at the Do Not Pay system. So the Do Not Pay system includes information on criminal charges, suspensions, debarments. And there's been a lot of work to try and centralize this information and make sure that agencies are all using the same data set, which is a challenge. But this Do Not Pay system does really push them, I think, years down the road in terms of what they've been able to do and making sure everyone's using the same ruler to look at grantees. It also addresses things like the financial stability of a grantee, the quality of their internal management system, which has always been important, but now it's done in a more structured way, their history and the record of complying with federal requirements. Frequency and their capacity of resolving audit findings, so whether or not you have an audit finding and you continue to have that same audit finding year over year, and then the ability to actually implement the programmatic requirements. So it's consistent with the ideas that guided risk management at the Department of Education design of their analytics tool.
Okay.
So all of these factors were incorporated in, and the data set was consistent with all of these ideas that were being developed simultaneously yet not released from the period of 2010 to 2013. So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. There's a office you guys mentioned in your report. It's the Department of Ed's Risk Management Service, RMS.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the roles and responsibility and mission of this office?
Mm-hmm. So Risk Management Service at the Department of Education is responsible for identifying and taking effective action to manage and mitigate the risks that could impact the department's ability to achieve its mission. So again, focusing on equal access to high-quality education to ensure global competitiveness of youth today. And specific actions that they do to support their mission and then the larger agency mission is developing coordinating policy, creating agency-wide tools that promote consistent assessment of risk, working with the program officers to develop increased internal capacity to understand what risk management is, and to the question that was asked in the previous section, sort of what is this, how do you define it, raising awareness around that, building competence, ensuring there's, again, consistent action so that you have a program office who's dealing with a particular state agency, that they're being treated similarly across program offices that may or may not have had a reason to talk with each other. They also do training and development, and then they're responsible for the policy, generating the policy documents that guide how the agency makes and then manages its grants.
Well, interestingly enough, would you tell us more about the procedures for designating a grantee as high risk?
Sure. So the risk designations can be made for either a grant program or all of the grants that an entity receives. And in that second instance, it's probably a more significant situation, right? Where,
sure.
You know, it's not just the management of this one grant, it's the management of all of the grants that you get. And it's a legal, structured, formal, predictable, you know, very rigorous process that involves the Office of General Counsel.
Okay.
There are existing regulations that the department uses to establish the thresholds and the criteria. And then this process of making the designation usually is followed by the placement of some conditions on the receipt of that money to make sure that, okay, we've identified a potential performance issue or the presence of risk. Now we want to put this condition in place to sort of reduce the likelihood that there'll be fraud, waste, or abuse, or inability to execute program goals.
So the foregoing description of risk management at Ed has focused on risk assessments that are conducted prior to making the grant award, mm-hmm. correct? However, it should be noted that a risk designation can be made before or after a grant is awarded or has been made. Would you tell us a little bit more about the four phases of the grant cycle?
Sure. So risk management's foray into the pre-award process was huge mm-hmm. because subsequent to the creation of this tool, they had only looked at risk after the grant award had been made, which is a little late.
Yeah.
We're determining once we've given funds to someone that there's a potential problem. Not that it shouldn't be done once the award has been made, but you'd really want to catch that and know that going in, right? So there's the pre-award cycle, and that's where this study looks at the use of the new tool that they created. But there's pre-award award, which is the process of, you know, issuing the GAN and this grant award notice and the letter going out and the funds being moved from one place to another, and then the grantee can access them. And then there's post-award, which is everything that happens after the award is made with the money and the paperwork being moved. And that's the process of implementing the program. So identifying the students who are going to benefit, doing the appropriate planning, delivering the service. And during that part of the grant cycle is where you see monitoring and technical assistance. So the agency would be involved in sort of picking up the phone and saying, grantee, are you doing okay? Or providing technical assistance via maybe a conference or a webinar or something like that. And then regularly scheduled monitoring activities. So again, prior to risk management's creation of this tool, mm-hmm. the monitoring had always been where the identification of the issue would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the final phase in the grant cycle is the closeout phase, and that's where all of the paperwork and the performance outcomes for the grant are recorded, and you make sure that the finances are all in order. And it's also where you'd see, going back to the Omnicircular, you'd see the A-133 come in. You'd see each grantee that was receiving over $500,000 in federal funds submit a report on how well they managed assets, handled indirect costs, all of these fiscal requirements. And that would be another instance where you may identify risk, because if there is a series of audit issues that related to the use of the funds during the grant period, then you could also use that to identify risk. But again, all of these things are happening post-turning over of the dollar. So the real beauty of what risk management was able to do is to create all of these processes for identifying potential problems before the money was made so that you can get in front of it, and then everyone's better off because you're just providing the appropriate support before the funds are being used.
Mm-hmm. And what time frame was that at? When did that happen?
Geez, they started this work, I want to say, sometime around 2005, 2000. I mean, it was, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of prototyping that happened, and there was a lot of effort to collect the data and figure out how to present the information that they had in different ways and consult with people. Say, here's a prototype of what I have. This is what the data looks like. What would be most meaningful for you? And then what they wound up developing in around 2010 was this, the first prototype of the entity risk review that really reflected their own experience, feedback from the agency, and all available data.
And before we move on to the tool, I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate on the alignment between risk management at Ed and the new OMB requirements. When comparing them, does one find a high degree of consistency and overlap?
Entirely,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
And why is that the case? Was this serendipitous?
I think that in the federal space, people were becoming more aware of factors that are critical to consider when you're looking at risk in a grant profile. Mm-hmm. And so the agency was learning as it was going. And at the same time, you see across all federal agencies this push of focusing on risk information and past performance data and trying to make a thoughtful consideration of each particular entity. So it really was happening in a parallel track. And in addition to that, I'm sure that there was coordination and collaboration between the leadership at risk management and OMB and the agencies that were sort of spearheading this push. So I'm sure that the organizations that were, or the agencies that were coming together were sharing information at the table. I know that Karen Hardy had done, she had actually come to Ed to do to be part of a lunch and learn mm-hmm. process. So there was definitely ongoing, but informal, right? It wasn't an intentional sort of, but it was just as a byproduct of the work that each agency was doing.
So you noted that it took Risk Management Service several years to develop an agency-wide capacity to engage mm-hmm. in grant risk management. How have the size and scope of the risk management effort at Ed changed and expanded since 2001? And perhaps you could elaborate on the organizational evolution of the risk management service.
So when the risk management was created in 2001, it was in the office of the secretary. Okay. And there were, I think, five people who were just focused on management practices. Mm-hmm. And then now today you have 25 people and three teams. And those, you know, you went from just management experts and sort of looking at things like audit issues and sort of the internal financial systems, that kind of stuff, to a very diverse group of individuals who could really, when working together, deal with all of the aspects of grant management. So you had now we have a policy team. There's also a program risk management, the team that is in charge of creating the data, using the data and creating these tools, and then a management improvement team, which is sort of probably what reflects the core of what the organization started with as the beginning. So now you have policy, data, and implementation.
Would you tell us more about Ed's efforts to create new risk management tools? What are they and how are they being used?
My understanding of what the agency is working on now, and there's been a little bit of time since our data collection and the publication of the report, but I believe that there is an effort to increase the availability of data. And I don't mean to say increase the number of data elements that are presented in an ERR, but increase access to data that could be relevant, right? Which opens a huge door because something that's not relevant today could be later, but at least we have a way of putting that data element in the pool. And then, two, customizing the production of the ERR such that it doesn't reduce the standardization or the fact that everyone's making a similar decision about risk assessment, but that it does provide program officers with a subset of information that's most relevant to their particular programmatic requirements, right? So if we have program requirement A and the grantee never did well on that I report that to program B who doesn't really have that requirement, that's not all that useful. So being able to sort of shift the scale a little bit so that each person can get a customized ERR that still has a foundation or a framework that's pretty standardized across the organization. And then finally, I believe that there's a push to make this more user-friendly in the sense that it's not going to be something that you have to request that's run for you and then delivered, that they're looking for an interface that allows individuals to interact with the data. And again, you see an evolution, and I believe that the evolution and the agency's organization to be able to evolve in that way is really a success story in and of itself, because a lot of organizations don't function that way, and they have been able to create something formal where nothing existed before, build capacity, lead a conversation, sustain a conversation, and push that conversation into new space that I'm sure now with the Omnicircular being out there and systemization in this federal space, they have an infrastructure that's going to allow them to meet those requirements because they built all this capacity leading up to it.
So you've mentioned throughout the conversation, this part of the conversation, a tool that they created. What can you tell us about the entity risk review and how it continues to be redefined and or refined? And more specifically, what has Ed done to build its capacity to use these reviews?
I think it was remarkable what the vision for creating this tool. They really they showed a lot of thought leadership, I think, in identifying different data sources from different systems that currently weren't being linked but would be very informative if they were seen one next to each other. Mm-hmm. So, for example, all of the data from the A-133 audits exists in the Federal Audit Clearinghouse that is not agency-owned and operated. But we have a grants management system that has a grants management system that looks at the performance of the grantees, the financial information, their applications, their DUNS number, past performance, all of those things. So it would be helpful to see the grants management information next to the audit information. And then they incorporated a third proprietary set of data and tried to learn different ways of linking and looking at the relationship between those factors and then creating scores and thresholds so that when you're dealing with so much information, you can more quickly identify what would be a consideration. So if I've had a previous audit finding, is that a problem? Or if I've had the same audit finding for the last 5 years,